Good morning and good evening and welcome to the Peace Alliance Hope Story Circles. And if you're listening on Peace On, welcome. Peace On is your source for inspiring conversations and information from thought leaders across the spectrum on topics related to the strategies of building peace, fostering nonviolence, and creating a world that thrives, shifting our understanding toward empathy, compassion, and connection. And we welcome you from the Peace Alliance at peacealliance.org. Our Hope Story Circles have been going on for several months now, and they're really a place to gather and to share thoughts about certain circumstances that are coming up in these uncertain times. The Peace Alliance empowers civic action toward a culture of peace, and we also focus on education in addition to advocacy. And these kinds of circles are really an expression of education to allow all of us to be mindful and to share with one another. My name is Terry Mason. I'm on the board of the Peace Alliance, and I'm joined to facilitate by Liz Gannon-Graydon, who is also a board member, and Yelena Popovich, who is our Teaching Peace in Schools lead. And today we are delighted to have our special guest, Patty Latte, who is our social media expert with the Peace Alliance and also our Humanizing Justice lead on our council. So we welcome Patty, and we're going to just have a few moments just to say hello, Patty. How are you? Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Okay.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I hope all of us who are joining us are happy and healthy and safe. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here. I've been working with the Peace Alliance for quite a number of years, well, about three now, and always have found it to be such a positive, life-affirming presence in my life and in others, and being able to reach out with the positive stories and kind of share the peace-building activities and accomplishments that is happening all over the globe from so many different organizations is part of the joy in being the social media lead for the Peace Alliance. So I'm happy to be here.
You have also written a book about therapy dogs and participating in restorative justice. You want to mention a Pause for Peace?
Yeah, Pause for Peace came out of a program with a similar name that was part of our approach when I was a executive director for a nonprofit Full Circle Restorative Justice in Salida, Colorado. And we worked with therapy dog teams, including my own dog, Carmelita, and myself, who brought the dogs into the restorative justice circles, beginning with pre-conferences with victims and offenders, and bringing them through the process as a source of comfort and connection within the circle. And so the book actually came out of this program and profiles the individual teams as well as the process on how to incorporate therapy dogs successfully in the program of restorative justice.
Wonderful. Terrific. Well, listen, I know we have your story that's going to be shared very shortly, and we're anxious to share that with everyone here today. But first, let's have Yelena lead us in a little meditation and get us all centered together here. Yelena?
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, everybody that is here and that is listening. Yeah, let's come into a moment of settling. So please find a posture that allows you to gently and softly land into this moment, and letting your eyes close if that feels comfortable for you in this moment, or lowering your gaze and warmly welcoming yourself with tender appreciation. Just allowing to meet yourself in this moment with goodwill, whatever may be arising. The invitation is to practice inclining your mind, body, and heart toward kindness, And for this practice, feel free to put a hand on your cheek or heart or abdomen, whatever it feels comforting and soothing to you in this moment. As a reminder to bring kind and loving awareness to your body and experience. And let's start by taking a few full breaths. We're connecting with the soles of the feet and the ground. You to bring to mind an image of someone with whom you have a warm connection, perhaps a dear friend, relative, or animal, with whom is easy to feel a natural sense of warmth or care. Just let your awareness hold just one being. And see that being's image in the moment of happiness. And imagine the soft gaze of their eyes smiling at you. Take a moment to seep in their love and affection. And as you continue to feel their love and affection in your body, gently shift your attention to offering your loving care to them, letting it flow freely from your heart to theirs in your imagination. Just for a few moments, let your attention rest on the quality of warmth, care, and kindness. And as we come back to the group, I invite you to just take a moment to look around the group that we are in and just extend that warmth, care, and kindness to this group and to this moment. And I extend that to Patty. Welcome, Patty.
You're going to need to unmute yourself again, Patty. There you go.
Thank you. Can everyone understand me even in the mask?
We're good.
Okay. I'm currently in the library in Sutton's Bay in the Leelanau Peninsula in Michigan, and I was requested to put the mask on. So, understandably so. Mm-hmm. And actually, it ties into what my topic of conversation would be today and the story I'd like to share. Thank you, Elena, for leading us in that beautiful meditation and helping us center ourselves in a very sweet, positive way. Ah, okay. Can I start?
Yes, please.
Okay. Okay, so I mentioned I'm in Michigan. I live in Colorado. I haven't been home in Colorado in 11 months. And the reason is because I had a rather unique experience earlier this year, in which I had headed to Europe, to Portugal, to visit there for on a 3-month tour visa, in which I was actually working on a little cottage that I had purchased last year and was turning into a retirement home and a rental in central rural Portugal, in a town very close to Alcabaça. And it was a rather unique experience of being overseas and initially very lighthearted and fun and kind of an easy European travel adventure that changed into or evolved into needing to shelter in place. And what was a 12-week adventure turned into 7 months. That's continuing now in a state of displacement 7 months later. And in kind of backtracking through my journals today and thinking about what I would really like to share about this is the element of uncertainty, the element of vulnerability, and, you know, seriously having a need for a shared reality, which I don't think was happening much at all in regards to being overseas and in what was happening in the United States and what we were learning about how the COVID crisis and was progressing, and also just being in, you know, in Europe during a global shutdown. And I remember one of the quotes I had in my journal was, yeah, besides the COVID-19 crisis and a worldwide pandemic shutdown, everything's perfect. Which, you know, when you're overseas and you're concerned about your family, your friends, your loved ones, and living in a kind of a limbo, should I stay? Should I go? I felt very safe being in Portugal. I was in rural agricultural Portugal. There were no cases for the longest time there. And then there was one or two when they started opening things up, but we were in a lockdown situation for 2 months, and I was actually with my new love, my new partner in life, who came over for 6 weeks and wound up staying for almost 7 months too. And so we were together, which was very fortunate timing-wise. But we both do not speak Portuguese. I was enrolled in classes and learning, and I had joined a gym and was going to the pool and trying to fit in that, you know, lifestyle and make friends. And then the lockdown came, and that all ended. And when I say lockdown, I mean everyone in Portugal was locked down. And there were roadblocks on the roads, and everyone was inside. It was in a country that was in solidarity, for sure. Everyone was wearing masks. You could only go out to the pharmacy and to the grocery stores. And it was very eerie because we didn't have the news in English. And it was... the Portuguese government was very welcoming and extending visas automatically. They also told all foreigners or migrants that they would be treated as residents and would be covered for medical care in case there were any issues with the COVID. It was just very challenging. My family are all located in New York, what was the hot spot, the canary in the coal mine. In so many people I care about are there. And it was very challenging to kind of live each day with such a level of uncertainty and fear and worry, and then think about, oh, well, we're in Portugal. And it's an amazing, beautiful place with welcoming people. And we felt really fortunate to be there. And then we said, okay, we'll ride this out for 2 months. And hopefully the United States will have their act together, and then we could fly back safely. But that wasn't evolving. And we did book flights actually twice, and each time they were canceled and we couldn't rebook till about a month after that, because it's just limited flights and there were no flights going in and out of Lisbon. We'd have to fly someplace in Europe and then transfer. And that was putting us more at risk with the virus. I mean, we were very close to Italy and close to Spain. And so that was always a concern as well. And then we were finally able to book flights in August, which, and it worked out fine. We went through the quarantine for 14 days and healthy, but it was very risky, 30 hours of travel. The Europeans watched in horror, basically, as the U.S. reopened. They actually would talk to us about how challenging things were in our country right now. They're very polite. I hate to say this, but they pitied us. And, you know, and our American passports were pretty much useless, besides getting back to the States, because there was no way we were going anywhere in the EU. And they shut that down for EU residents as well for 2 months. So it was a time of really global uncertainty, very surreal. And we looked, you know, for connection. We looked forward to social media connections. We looked forward to videos, music. Music was my partner is a folk musician, singer and songwriter. So that was his connection. And working, you know, for the Peace Alliance was really grounding and positive, in that instead of focusing on the negative, I got to be out on the web and finding the positives and seeing what people were doing, pulling together, and the compassion and the sharing. And these hope circles were an outgrowth of that as well, which I find positive and inspiring. So I think the whole social distancing factor, and like I said, being so far away was challenging, and yet really had to learn acceptance and patience, which just wasn't my strong point. And then trying to really think about, you know, what is carrying us forward? Like, what is our hope, or our, you know, life connection, a life affirming activities, and realizing how vulnerable we were to a world that had shifted so dramatically, so quickly. So there was poems to write. There was, you know, very much a be here now perspective, and reaching out and connecting with family and friends, and, you know, feeling somewhat fortunate that we felt safe, but then on the other hand, feeling as if we needed to be home, you know, like aching for our homeland across the ocean of tears. I mean, when we finally were able to fly, we flew to Michigan, which is where my partner's home state is, and have been in a relatively peaceful, quiet place here as well, and feeling really fortunate, because being in a city has so many challenges. If I talked to a number of my friends, and but we're all in this together, and we're getting through, you know, whichever way we can, and hopefully feeling some level of solidarity and connection and realizing the compassion that exists as well. So,
Patty, mm-hmm. when you were talking, a couple of things came up for me, and I'd love to ask you about them if you could respond to them, if that feels right for you.
Okay.
Right before we got on the call, a friend had shared had shared something for me to watch. There's a conference apparently going on about collective trauma, and she said, "Liz, I think you should watch this." And it was a discussion with a between the host and a woman named Margaret Wheatley. And after our call last night, I was processing something you said, and she really named it. And I hear you bring that up. And she said one of the issues in this time of the pandemic around the globe is, unlike other moments of collective trauma, we don't have a shared identification of what exactly the trauma is. Which I thought was an interesting point, right? Because for some people, it's the loss of their livelihood. For some people, it's the fear of what's coming next. For some people, it's the thinking it's not a real thing and that everyone is overreacting. So when you talked about your vulnerability, that came up for me, like maybe kind of that idea that what you were experiencing, you when we're feeling trauma, we want to feel like we're in this shared place, but that might not have been the experience. And the other thing you named, which for those of you who have been on the calls more than once, is when you talked about Benny, the fact that he's a musician and that reaching out for music and finding words through music and art forms are one way to move through it. And that's a theme that's come up again and again. And I want to know if you wanted to address either of those ideas. Those were what were coming up for me as you spoke.
I agree with the first one, because there were so many different versions of living through the pandemic and people losing people far too soon, and the trauma of that, and the trauma of, you know, other people who are resenting the loss of their freedoms, or the young people who have no chance to find jobs or graduate from college, and the loss of like celebrations. And I totally get that. And that's why I felt, you know, somewhat fortunate that, you know, we were in a unique position in being, I guess, dealing with certain types of trauma, but not in the United States for that. It's so feeling removed and somewhat fortunate, but still struggling with that. So feeling guilty, like survivor's guilt, I guess, would be part of that. And then and I like the way you brought up, especially, I know your background, Liz, and your family's background with the arts and creativity. And I think, you know, I heard a number of people express either through Facebook or Instagram, they're like, yeah, what would be, how would you get through a pandemic without music or books or the arts or movies? Everybody signing up for Netflix subscriptions. And it's like, we had this need to not only entertain ourselves, but to educate ourselves and to also, you know, feel connected through different ways of video games, you know, with say my nephews, like, well, I played a lot of video games with my friends online. And just having, you know, the ability to express them, individuals creatively, there we go. Creative expressions, you know, for people, in whatever fashion. And I thought that was something that people could really hold on to. And adopting pets, like the COVID crisis really helped empty out the animal shelters. People were adopting dogs and cats and wanting companion animals. And so in so many ways, in addition to the earth getting a break, Mother Earth sending us to our rooms for, you know, however long, I think we were, there was definitely some benefits from this, as much as there was sadness and confusion and anxiety.
I guess I have one last question before we kind of frame going into the breakouts. I know, and I love the way you work with and honor animals and the relationships of the animals. And I love that Yelena spoke to that in our meditation as well. I guess maybe it's a leading question, but how do you see the role of empathy as being really important in this moment for facing what we have to face, or for shifting what we have to shift?
I believe that empathy is a respectful understanding of another person's experience. And while we all have different experiences in this, I think there's a human core connection of concern, compassion, the fear that's, you know, and then also a level of understanding that, you know, there are more vulnerable people in our populations, and then being able to look out for their health and well-being and safety. That's why it just amazed me and amazed so many of my European friends that were like, why would you not wear a mask? That's like showing compassion and consideration, not only for people you care, but for yourself. It's, you know, and so I think empathy is lacking and maybe needs to really be embraced, and people understand that concept, you know, to in applying to what we're going through in the pandemic situation. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. Pleasure. So let's frame the inquiry. What are we sending people to think about and to share?
Yelena, do you want to lead us through the inquiry? Thank you.
Maybe. If she could find her unmute.
Yes. I'm just trying to find the unmute.
There you are. You're done. You're here now.
Sorry about that. Yeah, thank you, Patty and Liz. Yeah, what I heard a lot is, you know, what happens when our choices are taken from us? What happens when your choices are taken from you? How do we care for each other and for each other's safety and vulnerability at this time? How do you practice empathy? And when we break out into groups, those are some of the inquiries I'm inviting you into. And as you come into these breakouts, just if we can agree on saying just enough, listening with your heart, listening to the story that folks are sharing, and speaking from the heart, speaking from your own story, and trusting that you know what to say, not rehearsing your story as you listen to others, and respect and protect stories and heartfelt shares with confidentiality. So when we come back, we just want to hear about your experience, not necessarily about your people's stories. And if you're not poised to share in this group, we invite you to offer a gift of listening. So that's the invitation.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to go into breakout rooms for about 15 minutes or so. I'm going to pause the recording, and then we'll figure that out. Then we'll come back together and we'll start up again.
Thank you.
All right. We are back together. So what came out of that? Does anyone want to share what came out of your breakout group? You can unmute yourself and speak.
Well, this is Judy, and I was with Bud and David, and Bud shared a lot of Native Indigenous people wisdom, and I was just talking about how wonderful they are, their history and their lore is, in terms of grounding us all in the moment and appreciating nature and each other and community. Big on community, and for me, it's a touchstone, and Bud really reminded me of that, of what a touchstone that is, to have nature and rocks. And he was talking about how Native American people, Indigenous people, as I know, rocks and what we consider inanimate objects also have energy and life and contribute to us. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in trusting that. And you can't trust maybe the more visible traditional interpretation of reality, to go back to just to hold the stone or sit on a stone or whatever, put your feet in the dirt.
Beautiful. Thank you, Judy. Mm-hmm. Is there someone else who wants to share what came up for them in their group?
Yes. My name is Lois. Hi.
Hi, Lois.
And I call with Christine and Marta. And our conversation revolved around, in a way, with the more personal kinds of connections, you know, talking about vulnerability of different groups of population, either the those of a certain age or those who are quite elderly, those who might have physical conditions, different abilities, etc. And the importance of, you know, compassion and personal responsibility and taking personal responsibility and being able to do so in a kind way and without judgment of others. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you, Lois. Would someone else like to share?
We can't see Lewis's picture, but I was with him in the group, and he's in Los Angeles. He's 98 years old. And speaking of another perspective, Lewis, bless your heart for your sharing. He said that the way to empathy is by having an open mind and connecting up with the meditation you did, Yelena, open mind, open heart. That's how we get empathy. So thank you, Lewis, again for your sharing, and blessings to you at age 98. May we all be so blessed. Yeah.
Wonderful.
So I have my hand up. It's Jan here.
Yes.
In our discussion, Chuo, who I think is in Africa, ended up, his connection was so bad he disappeared, actually. Oh. Which was too bad. But one thing that came up was, when your choices are limited or being taken away, then look at what resources you have. Mm-hmm. And there are amazing stories of people dealing with, like, being lost in the middle of the ocean. Oddly enough, I didn't say this to Nancy, but I have a friend whose boat fell apart in the middle of the ocean, and a blue whale came and helped him get through that.
Wow.
But anyhow, I did share a link in the chat, and we'll send it to Nancy as well, of an article telling the story very briefly of the blind hero of the French Resistance named Jacques Lucérin. Quite an amazing story. And I do find myself, when I look at these times where we are facing real terrible loss, I find it in some ways helpful to look at what people went through during the Holocaust, which was incredible loss, and how some people managed to survive, thrive, despite that situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We probably have time for one more share if someone wants to speak. Okay, Kate.
I'll jump in. My group is on fire, and so I have a lot of gratitude to the ladies that I just spent the last couple of minutes with. It was really, really some lovely sharing. And what came up for me that I want to share with all of you is, Terry, based on the question that you were asking, what do we do when our choices are taken away, right? What came up for me in that moment, my father's an attorney and my sister is his legal assistant. Okay, so anytime that I, and I'm a creative, I'm in the opposite end of the spectrum. But anytime that I had moments of large looming legal questions, I can, you know, dial in and check with my sister and my father. And I remember there was one point where I don't even remember what the situation was, but I just remember I was up against a rock and a hard place. And my sister says to me, look, she's East Coast, New York. Look, these are your choices. You're not going to like them. These aren't great choices, but these are the two that you have. And that stuck with me. And I use that now so often because it's a reminder, number one, that I'm actually never without choices, right? That I'm never without choices. But there may be times where I have two shitty choices that I have to decide between. And the way that that has become helpful for me is to look at both of those choices and think to myself, which one is the one that allows me the more agility to love, right? Which of these two choices allows me to channel my answer through love more easily? And that has been a lifesaver in terms of helping me to reframe things and giving me perspective. Right. Even in both of these hard choices, one of them is going to allow for more love than the other. So I wanted to just put that out there. And thank you for that question, Terry, because then it allowed me to remember my sister saying that to me in her wonderful tone.
That's terrific. All right. Well, we're going to bring this wonderful circle to a close. I am putting a few things in the chat, a link to the Peace Alliance website, the link to our Peace on podcasts. You can listen to this later, share it with friends, or look at the other ones. And we have other podcasts too. There's also a link to the Blueprint for Peace. That's one of our key initiatives that we're promoting at this time. Check it out. It's a way for you to engage your elected officials and your friends and the organizations you're involved with on encouraging policy priority towards our five cornerstones of peace. And we also have a donation link. We are a nonprofit. We appreciate any donations that you'd like to give. Liz, do you want to wrap it up for us?
Yeah, something came up for me that was affirmed by all four of you. I didn't know what I was going to say until the very end, but Judy and Lois and Jan and Kate, I think I have everyone. I was thinking of a moment, and I grew up in a house where we have filmmakers and artists, and I have a lot of cultural touchstone, like pop cultural touchstones. And I was thinking of a moment at the end of an episode of Friends, and Phoebe met her father for the first time, who had left when she was a little child. And they had this very kind of awkward trying to meet. And he went to reach out to her and he said, I'm not good at this. And then she said, oh, I am. And she reached his hand. And what I was thinking in that moment, when you talked about the touchstones, Judy, or Lois, when you talk about taking personal responsibility or responsible for the community, when Kate, when you just talked about the choices, I'm going to pick the one with love. So many people on this call, right, and those of us who come back, we do have these skill sets, right? We do have these abilities to reach out. And sometimes I feel like, okay, I'm good at this, so maybe I have to be the one to do this. And when I was thinking of Patty sharing very much her vulnerable state, and we're all in that vulnerable state, but we're not sharing reality of what our vulnerability is or how that's landing for us. So I was just thinking, as we go off into the week, if we can focus on that one person maybe we could reach out to, or that one practice that keeps us grounded, right? So if we go to that practice that grounds us in the most loving choice, and then how can we reach out in this particular week to share with someone who's feeling particularly vulnerable, especially if that vulnerable person isn't in our shared reality of why they're vulnerable? So that's what came up for me, right? And I was just really thinking about that. Not everyone knows how to do this, but a lot of us on this call do. So I'm appreciating everything everyone shared, and the work of Leo Biscaglia and all of kind of those love-centered practices. And so I want to send us off today saying gratitude to Terry, gratitude to Patty, gratitude to Yelena, and all of you who come every week. And let's just go off with that. What's a practice we can touch that grounds us in love? And how can we use that to reach out in empathy and connection with someone who's feeling particularly vulnerable? Thank you, guys.
Wonderful. Feel free to unmute yourself and say goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Lots of love.
Thank you. Enjoy
being here.
Goodbye. Yeah, have a good week.
Thank you for joining us today at Peace On. We hope that it inspires you to engage in dialogue in your larger community. Peace On is your source for inspiring conversations and information from thought leaders across the spectrum on topics related to the strategies of building peace, fostering nonviolence, and creating a world that thrives, shifting our understanding toward empathy, compassion, and connection. Peace On is brought to you by the Peace Alliance, found at peacealliance.org.